Yeah,
Delicious, yeah.
that was my first Pop Tart in my existence.
Jeez.
Like, we don't have that in Europe, you
Yeah,
know.
they don't allow that shit in Europe.
Yeah.
That's pure American
There's too
poison
much
right there.
regulation.
Alrighty, I'll hold up for just a sec, because we've all heard of living off the land as a red teamer technique, right? Well, unfortunately, I just got off a call with the Threat Locker team, and they said that isn't going to fly anymore thanks to the ring fencing feature. Let me double click on that for you, okay? Think of ring fencing as like an invisible fence around your applications. As soon as an application interacts with some app or system resource that it normally doesn't, bam, it gets blocked. Even if that thing is native to the OS, like PowerShell.exe or CertUtil.exe. So yeah, rip living off the land. Back to the drawing board for the red team, I guess. Anyway, if you want to see this in action, head over to threatlocker.com for a demo. And when you do, ask for my guy, Andrew. His demo was very to the point and he had great answers to all my technical questions. Check it out, y'all. Seriously, don't sleep on Threat Locker, especially not in this recent landscape of EDR uncertainty. Am I right? Yeah, I'm right. Okay, y'all know. All right, let's get back to the show. All right, Ronnie, dude. What a day, man. Am I right?
Yeah, no, man. That was the day. That was the day.
It was indeed. And yeah, it is late. It is what, 11 o'clock? And we are still recording a pod for you guys because we love you. And this beautiful thing right here that is sitting in front of us, for those of you that are not watching, I'm sorry. But this is the Google Bug SWAT MVH trophy that
yeah!
your boys won.
I'm so freaking happy, man.
Yeah, dude, that was a wonderful event. Shout out to the Google team. It was really awesome. And whenever we have sort of events like this, I kind of want to just do a bit of a debrief, right?
Yeah, of course.
So let's see, where do I want to start? Once again, we kind of go straight to the main app, right? That's a part of my methodology. I don't know if that's as much a part of your methodology, but it's somewhere I'm very comfortable, right? And I think that has a lot of value, but it doesn't always pan out because a lot of times in the targets that we've been facing recently, there's been ways to affect main scope, you know, tier zero scope, by going around. So I've been thinking more lately that I kind of want to start doing that again, but this event once again reinforces the upsides of just going straight for the main target. So how did you feel about that this event?
Yeah, I feel like we, like the Google team facilitated everything, so we could actually hack on the main target. During the scope call, they explained to us the entire application, and we really went in depth about how it was impacting the business. And that's something that I really, really like to understand, all the business impact of a vulnerability, how I can bring value to the table. And not only they told us about all the past vulnerabilities that brought value where they found it, but also like, hey,
yeah,
if you bypass that, this is a huge vulnerability. And so, you know, when we hear that, we want to find that again.
Yeah, it's massive when the company helps you with threat modeling, right? Because I think one of the first steps, and actually I really liked how we both intentionally did that this event, where we spent some time getting to know the application, right? Getting familiar with the scope. And then we sat down and we just looked at each other and we're like, how do we attack this thing? Like, okay, we can come from this direction with prompt injection, or we can come from, you know, this place or the other place, that sort of thing. And that ideation, I think, over the course of our hacking on this target, led us to the right path pretty quickly,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Because we only, I think, I mean, you did a little bit of hacking before, but because of various like family things and travel plans that I had and H1 life hacking event, I only had like 3 or so days to hack on this target. But we were still able to get a really good result, and I think that's because of thorough threat modeling done by the Google team and also by us.
More than that, like, I know that you like to talk about technical, but to be honest, it's because that guy never takes any break. That's the reason we got MVH.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Well, I had to tell you so many times, now we are going on a break, Justin.
Well, that has value too, right? Because like I was, you know, burning the midnight oil, you know, I was hacking until like 1:30 or so after having done DEF CON and other competitions and stuff. But you know, the times when you said, all right, Justin, go get food. Justin, go, let's walk around. Justin, let's sit here and talk about the attack vectors and get reoriented. That really helps. And I think that also played into the collaboration. So really good stuff there.
I think, yeah. Isn't it the first time that we... Yeah, no, it's the second time that we collaborate like fully on the target, like, and we pass all the time that we have on this.
Yeah, both Google, thing. Right?
Yeah, yeah, both Google. Man, I think by the end of the day, like, this collaboration really worked well because, like, we have like some different style of looking at something and also of, you know, managing our time or mindset of hacking. I know that sometimes you like to go on a laser focus and go all the way until we find the vulnerability. And sometimes I like to take back things and just say, okay, let's put back context to what we're doing and try to understand, isn't there like an easiest path? And those techniques are really different, but at the same time, it's like the two face of a coin, right?
Yeah,
they complete both. Each other. Yeah, definitely. And I think that really helped us because at one time we were like, we need to go deep into that technique, and that's where we found like we're under NDA for most of it, and we hope that we can disclose that one day, but we found like the first attack vector that we reported, and it's because like you wanted to dig deeper and we couldn't let you do anything else, right?
yeah that was definitely huge. And I think also just going back to that as well, you know, regarding context and versus like laser focus and going deep and deep and deep. A lot of times in fully black box scenarios, you have to kind of do that by intuition and by a feel. But with the Google Life Hacking events, something is really different from any other life hacking event that I've really participated in. And that is that Google engineers, some of the smartest people in tech will
in
sit
the world.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Will sit next to you with their laptops and like go through code and like talk through your attack vector with you at a very knowledgeable level. And these are people not that you know, are on the security team and like, you know, do security stuff but don't really touch the code. These are like I say, here's the functionality, and like within 5 minutes, they have narrowed down all of the Google code base to that just that functionality, and you're looking at the correct function, which is just an amazing skill, but also I think speaks to Google investing a lot of time and effort into their code search tools, and then weaponizing, you know, really equipping their engineers to know how to use that effectively. And I think that is something that will, that contributed to us being able to find a really, really solid bug on a very short timeline.
And I think what also really helped is that Google mindset is that hunters are the extension of the security team, right? We are not two separate entities. We are trying to do the same job. And so they are going to go all the way to help us actually pop a crit. And that speaks a lot about how they see the industry and how they value bug hunters. And I feel like more companies should give that trust. And I don't know like if Google is in position to do that because they are Google or just because like the security team are just a bunch of great human beings.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, actually, I think I was talking to some of the Googlers about it. And I think it's also because they have a good lawyer associated with their team that's semi-technical, right? That understands the requirements of what needs to be happening and kind of makes that happen, right? So I think that's a huge piece. And I know that a lot of organizations don't have access to that and probably won't have resources to do that, but I feel really privileged to be able to participate in a Google Life Hacking event where we do have that privilege. And we can see, you know, the bolstered effect of that happening there. Yeah, so, all right, let's go from there to some of the technical stuff. Obviously, we're under NDA for a lot of stuff, but I think we can talk about overarching principles. And because Google's pretty good with disclosure, I think we should be able to talk about more technical details in the future. But let's just say, as always, anytime you are able to run code in a sandboxed environment, that needs to be thoroughly checked. And not only does it need to be thoroughly checked on the front of can we escape the container? Can we do some sort of super technical exploit that will allow us to break out? Or is there a misconfiguration in the container? But also on the front of what kind of things are being put into that container? And how can we weaponize the various services that are exposed there to accomplish malicious goals. Because sometimes that container is locked down as can be, but there's an API sitting right outside, or like a port sitting open on an adjacent host that can really make all the difference.
Yeah, like, you know, when life throw you like a bunch of, you know, tools that are like not useful at all, you need to do something with it. You need to build something with it. And basically, when you are in a sandbox environment, and maybe you are not like the kind of hunter that know all the sandbox escape in
the
world.
Yeah, I'm a web guy, dude.
I'm a web guy too, and I don't know how to escape in a sandbox, and that's not something I want to look at. But like, we basically looked at one another and just say, okay, what's inside the sandbox? And because also the Googlers told us, like, hey, you should check what's inside the sandbox, because sometimes we don't even know what's happening there.
Yeah. I think that's big. I think that's really big. And I think going after targets you're intimidated by as well is necessary. And something pretty much every time I've been proud of the performance that I've had at a live hacking event, it's been when I've gone after a target that I was intimidated by. So that's big. Yeah, that's actually, as I'm saying it to you here on the pod, I am realizing that needs to be like a core tenet of my scope selection from now on, is like, what is the most intimidating part of this app? What is the thing that is going to be hard for me to hack, or that I need to learn stuff about? And then going after that, I think that will pay dividends a lot of times. And like we ran into in this situation, there were many things that we didn't know how they worked. You know, we were looking at a lot of code that we weren't familiar with, the language, the structure, the linting rules that they have. It's like whack how things are formatted. But we kept on pushing through all that, and I think we got a result that we're proud of.
I really like what you're saying here, because that's something that really resonates with a lot of time of my mindset. But at the same time, I think I'm not applying it too much. But it's that our comfort zone is the same as so many other people's comfort zone.
Yeah, and web is debatably the easiest to learn. Yeah. I think.
But even outside hacking, like, our comfort zone is, you know, the same as so many people comfort zone. And when you try to step out, you will go to unexplored places. And that's where research truly starts. It's not like when we take a methodology and just apply it and see if it works. It's when you do not have any cue about what kind of methodology you are going to use, you are going to the scary stuff and you are going to get scared. Like, I think if it wasn't for you doing the collab, I would have just said, no, it's too hard. But you were like, no, we need the next step. And then I was like, oh, okay, but we can do that. And we pushed one another, and that's what really helped us, I think, go out of this comfort zone. And because also each of every step was so funny, like,
yeah, oh man, it was so great. Cool. Yeah, yeah. There's some, the product we're hacking is very, there's some very humorous outcomes on that, which is really good. The other technical piece that I, or a couple, two more technical pieces that I wanted to bring in, is a trend that I've seen across multiple live hacking events now, which is that there are often some really, really good bugs in the SDKs for the targets that we're looking at, right? Like, if you're targeting an application, fine, go hack that application. But oftentimes there's ways for customers or like collaborators, I don't know what to say, that like associated companies, to utilize part of the code in like sort of an integration, right, with the app that you're hacking on. And those are really, and not just an integration in the sense of like, oh, you go into the web panel and you link your account, which often does have problems, but that's not what I'm talking about right now. What I'm talking about is more of code exposed that the target application wants their customers to run on their machines to integrate correctly with this app, right? And I think time and time again, we've seen really impactful vulns there. One, because a lot of people just focus on the main web app and don't go after the SDKs, but also because when you can tell a company that their code is making their customers vulnerable, that really freaks them out.
Yeah.
And oftentimes you'll have customers implementing the code in a very similar way across the board. And if the company is large enough to be running a bug bounty program, you often have a very large impact surface for those sort of things. So that's a really great tip as well when it comes to selecting a target and going towards a little bit more of a untraditional approach to attacking that main application, right?
Yeah, and also on top of that, like, if you can really understand the core of the business, if you can leak anything, you'll know if it's impactful or not. And that assessment is really, really interesting to do because, like, on previous LiveHacking events I've attended to, like, Snorlax and I found in the JavaScript file just some description of integration that the company was doing with their clients. However, those integrations were totally confidential. And so we just reported a bunch of text that was exposed in a JavaScript, and we got paid for that. And I guess that a lot of people would have missed that because we don't have like this understanding of the business. So even if we are deep down in the technical, we are like trying sandbox escape and everything, and then you see a piece of code and you're like, wait a minute, isn't that something that's not supposed to be there? And you go all the way to look at why it's not supposed to be there and what we could do with that. Even if it's not like a secret, a credential or something like that, this just having the business perspective could help you to find the vulnerability and convert like something that you think is nothing to that should be there.
Yeah, I think you do that really well, Ronnie. I've seen you do that a couple times across different scopes. So I think it also reminds me of a scenario that I ran into at a live hacking event probably 3 or 4 years ago with John Botterini. And he essentially was one of his highest paying bugs of the event was him showing the team how his requests could cause extreme legal action to be taken against them and massive fines from the government, right? And they were like, oh shit, you know, like it was bad. And that's just not, and that required more knowledge of policy and how it applies to the scope, how it applies to the application and how they were automating, you know, some of these more regulated sectors for him to be able to find that vulnerability. And then on top of that, properly explain it to the security team and then to the legal team as well as they became involved. So there's clear PII leak, there's code execution, there's, you know, all of these more known traditional classes, but I think there's also a whole class of like vulnerabilities that relate to legal compliance, weaponizing GDRP,
GDPR.
GDPR. Thank you. It's late. Thank you. I was like,
No worries.
GDRP. That doesn't sound right. Yeah.
No, that's too European.
So I'm not European. Yeah. The US mind cannot comprehend GDPR. There we go. I think that's something that requires a farther knowledge of the app, which can be attained by using the app, reading the documentation, doing really thorough threat modeling. Yeah.
That's actually a trick that I've used in Bug Bounty to raise the severity of certain leakage that I had. It was just like, hey, can you run this by your legal team and just tell me what they say to you? And something that people do not often realize is that in most of the companies, the security team and the legal team don't get along at all. And so when this security team at the time asked the question to the legal team, like, this was straight up race to a critical, and they were like, yeah, we got a huge problem now. And like just before, they was like, oh, that's medium, you know. And so that's a cool trick to just ask the legal like the security team what's up about the legal impact, because sometimes we miss stuff about those policies. So I think that we should dig deep in the technical, but sometimes we need to take a step back and just think about, okay, what's the business impact here and what's the legal impact, and all those other implications that are more like, I would say, human and policies, less technical. But I think that the way that we both think, that really help us on our collab.
Yeah, with that. For sure. I think just bringing it over to the last technical thing that I had sort of in my head from this event as a takeaway, which is that I think when you think about the age of companies as well, there's a lot of vulnerabilities that crop up more than expected. And Google's been around for a while, you know, and they've been a part of, like, their code has become core and important from very early on, right? In the internet, really, even. Yeah. And so I didn't really think of Google like an old product, and I'm sure it's gotten lots of code review and rewriting and that sort of thing. But I think there were a lot of things that I saw in this event that surprised me from that I would have more associated with older companies that cropped up on Google. And so taking some time thinking about, okay, well, hey, we all know that, you know, PayPal and eBay and like some of these, you know, older companies, right? Just to name a couple, Google as well. They've got some janky stuff in there, and approaching it like an older application rather than something that is might have modern architecture decisions, even though, of course, Google does. But there's also those older pieces that have to stay around.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like those companies like are so big that they have so many processes in place, like technical processes, you know, in order to not screw up some part of the code base, that sometimes you just need to rely on human error and just a logic error in the flow. So I'm not talking about like business logic error, but just like, hey, what happened if this happened? It's still inside the policy of code review, compliancy and everything, but it shouldn't be there. And so that's, I think, an angle of attack for those giant companies of just trying to think about scenarios where everything goes right because they're a process-based company, but that sometimes the process is actually the vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Do you have any thoughts? So those are my main thoughts on the technical pieces for the event. Did you have anything that came to mind that you were surprised about from the event from a technical perspective, or any of the things you wanted to shout out about the event itself?
Yeah, a shout out. I have at least one in mind. I will start with the technical. I would say like all the others, Bug Hunter at this event really astonished me by all of their skill and knowledge about the Google infrastructure. Something that I realized is that the Google Bug Hunters are not that much in the scene of other platforms and other live hacking events, but they are so skilled, and it really astonished me. Like we met Tom, who is the first on the Google VIP,
on
the Google VIP program, and the way that he thinks about vulnerabilities, like he casually drops some internet breaking vulnerability, and he just had to be pulled by oops,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Yeah, that was that. I know exactly what you're talking about. That was very, yeah. We were talking about some research that came out. We'll keep it, you know, under wraps. But we were talking about some research that came out recently. They were really excited about. And then he's like, "Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about." And then he like pulls up a report from like 2020 or 2019.
Something like that.
And he's like, "Oh yeah, I think I found this back then." And I was like, "Okay, well, why didn't you freaking publish it?" You know, like I would have loved to have seen that. Yeah. You know, back then. And so. I mean, of course, there's reasons not to, but it's amazing to see what kind of knowledge that we just sort of assumed was not there, right? Yeah. Until the research was released. But there are, you know, motivated actors, specifically people that are focusing main on a specific bug bounty program or something like that, or people that just want to keep a lower profile that are just total beasts. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like when we had this discussion, it was at lunch and he showed you the report, and I would have loved to film your face because I actually looked the other bug hunters and I think he broke Justin. Like,
oh my gosh, dude, I was tripping, man. You know, yeah. How I am with Vulns. Like, you see the Vuln and you're just like, that is a thing of beauty. That is a thing of awe. You
yeah,
know?
Of course.
Yeah.
And also like one big shout out that I want to do about this whole event is like, that's your third MVH, man.
Dude, yes it is. I'm excited for that. So Franz, come get it. Come get it, boy. I don't know if he has a non HackerOne MVH. He might be at 4 or 5. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it does feel nice. It really does.
Yeah. Man, I'm so happy because this is also my first one.
Dude, yeah. You rocked it, man. Yeah. It was a great collab. It was a great collab.
Yeah, definitely. For people like to understand how great of a collab it was, yeah, at some point it was so late at night, and because of jet lag and everything, I was just sleeping on my keyboard. Like, he could actually see me sleep on my keyboard, and at some point he was like, hey dude, I got the next step, wake up. And like we got through it, and the next day he was so asleep,
I was out.
We were at the Google, like they had like a suite at a really nice hotel, and he was just sleeping on the couch in front of everyone.
Yeah, dude. And it was bad.
And at this point I was continuing like what he started on the research, and I think that tells a lot about our collab, but also like I would say about our friendship and like the trust that we have. And I realized that when we're doing it, it was just so funny, man. That was so cool.
Yeah, man. Definitely a wonderful collab. Shout out to all the Googlers out there. Sam, Herb, Gabor, Jan, Martin, yeah. You know, all of them. It was a really cool event. The space that they held it on the second day was really awesome too. And man, the snacks there were pretty much unparalleled. Like literally you walk in there and there's like a whole freaking king size bed worth of like size table filled with like a different snack on each vertical row. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, I'm like a kid in a candy store. I got some like trail mix. I got some like, what the frick are these? Like little Pop-Tart bites. Like it's delicious, man.
That was my first Pop-Tart in my existence. Like we don't have that in Europe. You
yeah. know? They don't allow that shit in Europe. That's pure American poison.
Too much
right
regulation.
There. All right, Ronnie, well thanks for, I know it's late, man. We're pushing it, but yeah, thanks for coming on the pod and debriefing a little bit with me. It was a really fun event. I think there's some good takeaways.
Yeah, and man, we can do that whenever you want, like, you know, winning MVH.
of course. All right, dude, good stuff.
Have a good one.
Peace. And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want more Critical Thinking content, head over to ctbb.show/discord. Join the Discord. There's lots of great conversations and chats going on over there. And if you want to support the show, there's the Discord subscriber tiers, which give you access to masterclasses, AMAs, hackalongs, exclusive scripts, and an exclusive chat channel with us. We'll see you there.